is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, March 3rd, 2023, and today will be better than yesterday. I'm Buster Olean. I'm working from Tampa today. Taylor Schwenk, Sarah Abbott are back in you're in the range of Bristol. How are you guys doing today?
Doing just great. Getting ready. Taylor's wife and myself and my friend are going to a bounce Pilates class tomorrow. So it's very exciting over here.
And Taylor was invited to that, right? Like he was, come on with us, Taylor.
Ooh, I must be looking for that invite in the mail. Maybe it's coming today, Sarah. I don't know. I mean, it's did you send a carrier pigeon or a raven or something?
It's Girls' Day. It's a girl's day.
Okay. All right. I'll do my own thing. It's fine. You guys have a friendship being forged over the podcast, though, Buster. That's the important thing here. The other important thing, real quick, you're on Instagram now. We cannot bury that lead because that's the most important thing that's happening here.
Yeah, Sarah, since you created the account, why don't you give some details?
Yes. So be sure to follow at BusterOlney_ESPN on Instagram. We are going to be sharing clips from the show. So if you like the video stuff, be sure to check out that. And Buster's also going to give us a little insight into Montana life.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm going back there this weekend. I got 2 days in Tampa, going to be around the Yankees today and tomorrow. But today we're going to be talking with Carl Ravitch about some of the broadcasts. And guys, coming up, a story about an umpire who absolutely helped out our broadcast on Thursday. I think you'll find this really cool. And also a story that Rafael Devers told me about after he signed his big contract, $313.5 million. One of my big takeaways from this week. Some news and notes as we get started. Miguel Rojas, the Dodgers' new shortstop, is going to withdraw from the WBC and focus on his preparation for the regular season. Of course, this week, Gavin Lux blew out his knee. Miguel Rojas appears to be the guy who's going to get most of the playing time for the Dodgers, so he wants to stay in their camp. Terrible news for the Colorado Rockies. Brendan Rodgers, who's one of the Rockies' best players, may need shoulder surgery that could keep him out the entire 2023 season. But Black noted that multiple MRIs revealed that the damage to Rodgers' shoulders was worse than originally thought. He's 26 years old. He's a Gold Glove winner. Absolutely stinks. The Royals signed ex-All-Star Jackie Bradley Jr. to a minor league deal. We saw them have suffered some injuries with their younger outfielders earlier in camp, so now they get a veteran outfielder. Really is very similar to Michael A. Taylor, who they wound up trading to the Minnesota Twins during the course of the wintertime. Some sounds from spring training. How about Anthony Volpe, one of those guys competing for the starting shortstop job for the Yankees? This is what he did in the top of the first inning yesterday.
My pick for...
Pick for a windblown home run.
I didn't pick that.
Anthony Volpe. They think this guy is as good a prospect as they've had since Derek Jeter. Hit 18 home runs at AA last year before a September call up to AAA.
That from the Pirates television network. That home run was hit down in Bradenton where, yes, the wind was blowing, but Anthony Volpe looks great in the Yankees camp so far. Freddie Freeman did some damage for the Dodgers.
Next offering is swung on and hammered deep to right center. Going back to the wall. Gone! A home run for Freeman. His second of the spring. And the Dodgers strike first on a Freddie homer. It's 2-0.
So Christian Yelich looking for a big bounce back season. He came to the plate for the Brewers. First pitch of the game. This is what happened.
Here's Yelich, and he sends one out towards left. Backing up. Thompson still back, and Yelich has gone deep. Started the game on Tuesday with a ringing double on the first pitch. He goes deep here on Thursday.
And Adley Rutschman, superstar catcher for the Baltimore Orioles. Boy, he had a moment yesterday. Give a listen to that one. Wait, Taylor, what happened?
Oh, man. It doesn't seem like there was a broadcast crew down there in Florida for this spring training game, you know, with the Orioles' best pitching prospect on the mound as well. That's really weird, Buster. Really weird. I wish, you know, some of that money that the Nationals, they're holding from the Nationals, or, you know, the money that they didn't spend in free agency. Maybe they sent a broadcast crew down there to so we can watch their prospects. But instead, you know, World Series of Poker on Mass, and check it out, 1 p.m. today. Great, great programming.
For the record, is Taylor Rantz. He's wearing an Orioles hat. Mm-hmm. Huge Orioles fan. Not happy that you didn't get to see the home run or Grayson Rodriguez yesterday.
Correct. Correct. Very unhappy. And I don't think I'm alone amongst Orioles fans. So just a tip. Well,
what else you got?
Buster, the CJ McCollum show, the Low Post with Zach Lowe, the Hoop Collective, my favorite listen among our NBA podcasts. We're getting down to the end of the season here. I think there's about 20 games left, and then it's playoff time. So check out all of our NBA offerings wherever you're listening to this podcast right now.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
All aboard. It's the Rabby Train with Carl Ravitch. Baseball tonight.
Carl Ravitch, play-by-play man on Sunday Night Baseball, and twice during these 4 days of exhibition games on ESPN. Ravi, how you doing?
I'm doing great. You caught me sort of the middle post-workout, so if I apologize for the sweat, but I'm doing great. And it was a rare drive home from a spring training game versus fly, so that helped.
Yeah, I got to tell you, my drive to Tampa last night, I just was so excited about everything that we saw this week. The conversations that took place, you know, the broadcasts that we got to do, it was just a lot of fun. What was your takeaway from these 4 days?
Yeah, look, I still believe firmly that baseball is in for a historic, massive year. It's going to be wildly successful. I think it's going to take a little while for people to actually realize how different the game is until you attend one or watch one on TV. But yesterday, Buster, I saw, you know, video of, I think it was Wandy Peralta struck a guy out in 20 seconds. And
yeah.
You know, there were innings yesterday when Alex Cora wore that headset and there was the 1-2-3 inning. I'm guessing that half inning, you know, took 3 minutes. And I just want to guard against people thinking we're trying to rush this thing away, which we're not. You know, we love the game as much as everybody watching it. But part of the new reality is when a pitcher is on and a bullpen is good and both teams have that, you're going to see a 2-hour game. You're going to see an hour and 55 minute baseball game. It's very different, you know, than what we're used to. But be ready, you know, kind of strap your seatbelt on because it is going to move and there's a lot of action and all of that. But I'm really delighted by what we saw. And it feels to me, you tell me, but the shift, pitch clock are the two biggest things. The disengagement doesn't seem to be a huge deal. The bigger bases doesn't seem to be a huge deal. And maybe it's early and they'll start to take advantage or try to take advantage of that. But it's the pitch clock and it's the shifts that seem to be the ones that are moving ahead as far as changing the game.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see teams' strategy in terms of stealing bases until we get into the regular season. Like, I feel like that behind closed doors, Buck Showalter, you know, Alex Cora, they're holding the cards. You know, they're not going to show anybody. But once we get into the regular season, we'll see how those change the game. We've already seen how the pitch clock changes the game. An average time reduction from 2022 to 2023, Carl, by 22 minutes. You know, yesterday's game, let's be honest, we in this exhibition we did between the Phillies and the Red Sox yesterday, it was a terrible spring training game, like in terms of, you know, the mistakes, and you had young pitchers who couldn't throw strikes. You know, there were constant pitching changes in the middle of an inning. There were a ton of runs. There were a ton of hits. And what was it, 3 hours and 1 minute?
1 minute. 3 hours and 1 minute. You know, the truth was both of the games that, our crew did were not great baseball games, and they were each 3:01, and the first one between the Mets and the Cardinals was 2 hours and 59 minutes. Both of those games would have been nearing 4 hours, maybe over. You're just not going to see that on a regular basis, let alone a sporadic basis during the regular season. You're not. And that, you know, think about worst case scenario. I think we kind of saw it, 3 hour baseball game. And you know, I bet at some point, as I listen to our conversation, the commissioner, Morgan Stewart, whoever it is with Major League Baseball, Raul Ibanez, you know, they're going to come out and say, look, we wanted to shave off some time here, but we're so fixated on 3 hours, you know, 250, three. It's like, that's not the point. Is does the game move at a better pace? The actual time on the clock when it's over shouldn't really matter as long as the pace has been improved. And that surely is the case. Like, you can't deny it. And it's not something that's going away. That's fact.
So something else that I definitely noticed this week in these four games that that ESPN did is that the feature that we started a few years ago, where you mic up players during the course of games, this has become normalized. And now people are open to it. Look, Paul Goldschmidt would be the first to tell you that, you know, the idea of wearing a microphone during the course of a game and having give and take with a booth is not something that he has a reflex to do. But he told me that, you know, he said, you know what, I watch golf and I see them doing it and I really like it. And if that's what fans want to see, that's great. So he was one of the people who agreed to do it. You know, we had yesterday, you know, examples of teammates on both teams talking to each other with the booth during the course of the game. It was incredible fun. And you do get the feeling that, yes, while the Yankees, you know, during the regular season will probably not be a team where they're going to say, yeah, we can mic up the pitcher. You know, they're going to be more conservative. Generally speaking, you see that ball moving down the field too, Carl.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt that the evolution of microphones and players and communication is here, and it's going to evolve. Look, personally, the two teammates talking with each other is unbelievable. And there are certain criteria you need, like, you know, Justin Turner and Kike Hernandez are longtime friends. They're current roommates down in Florida. The conversations that they share during the game about some of the things that they're dealing with, you know, off the field. Kike Hernandez goes to a wine and a painting event the night before, walks into the house where Turner is and says, I'm Picasso. I painted this picture. No one would ever be exposed to that. I use my wife as an example. Somebody who watched the game learned an awful lot more about the personality of Christian Arroyo that we would not have known otherwise. His little Kenley Jansen impression was unbelievable. Look, Roger Clemens humanized himself yesterday, and he wasn't even part of the game, but he joined us and shared a secret about the way that he called his own pitches by using his eyes and kind of geared Posada to the outside. This is a fastball down, whatever it was. So all of these things make for a better experience. The caveat and the one, you know, glitch in all of it is going to be when you are having a conversation or a player is communicating and a ball is hit to them and something goes wrong, because that's clearly the, you know, the cause for concern on the player is and the manager. We got to win the game. I mean, this is a regular season game. It means something. We can't jeopardize that. As sensitive as we all are to recognizing when you engage, et cetera, it's baseball. It's, you know, there is no script. Something's going to happen. And that's going to be sort of, that's going to be the line of demarcation. How do you deal with that when it happens?
Yeah, I remember last year when we had the Mets and Francisco Lindor was talking with the booth. And I know you already started laughing because you remember the moment. And there's this absolute rocket hit to him with two outs. And the thought flashed into my brain, like, please make the play. Please make the play. Please make the play. Because I know Buck Showalter. You know Buck Showalter. And I know Francisco Lindor, if he doesn't make that play, he's probably never wearing a microphone for us again.
Right. Exactly. And he said it. He had the same thought. Oh, my gosh, I'm talking. Let me make this play. Please let me make this play. So, yeah, that I mean, look, that's it's like Little League. You know, God forbid one of these Little Leaguers on the mound take a rocket off the bat. That's one of those line of demarcations where you haven't seen it, but these kids are so big. And you're like, what's going to happen when that happens? And let's hope it never happens. And let's hope a player never is involved in a play where they're talking and they're, you know, they're confused. They're preoccupied and it prevents them from doing their job. We don't ever want that.
So last year, I felt like you put Aaron Judge's season on a tee in terms of where his mindset was at the beginning of the year after turned down the Yankees $213.5 million offer. You walked up to him near the batting cage and asked him about, man, that's a risk walking away from that kind of money. And he said something along the lines of, I'm in a good place. Well, that stuck with me the whole year, that conversation. I'm curious about these 4 days. Give me a conversation that really stuck out at you.
Well, that's a good one. I mean, all of the conversations were, you know, associated with the rule changes. And the other one was the WBC. I think one of the more interesting conversations I had was with Tommy Edmond of the Cardinals. And that's hardly dismissive of all the other great conversations I had with the players that we saw. But Edmond was great because he's a smart guy. He's a thinker. He's analytical. He's probably going to benefit from every one of the rule changes. He's so athletic up the middle. It's going to emphasize that. He's a guy that's going to steal a lot more bases because the Cardinals are certainly in tune with the bigger bases, et cetera. He's physically, you know, sort of in a place where not many other athletes are. He's stocky, he's short, he's fast, he's strong. And you know, he's been kind of the consistent guy there, but like Trey Turner, I think is going to benefit from being in New York and some ballparks and maturity and the rules. I think Edmond is going to do the same thing. And he was just delighted by those changes. And also the idea that, you know, after the game, he hopped on the flight that I was on to Atlanta. And then I was on my way to Florida for this game that we did yesterday. And he's on his way to Korea for the World Baseball Classic. And I saw pictures of him once he got there from our old KBO friend, Daniel Kim. Mm. This is a real fascinating, wonderful time in a lot of these guys' lives. And Edmond is one of them. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, for me, I think it was a conversation I had with the Red Sox third baseman, Rafael Devers, yesterday. First off, the fact that he would, you know, essentially do an interview in his second language. You know, players just always amaze me and how quickly they adapt. Because, you know, in the first years of Rafi's career, our communication, because I don't speak Spanish, is essentially a hand wave, a smile, how you doing? Very simple. Well, yesterday had this great conversation with Rafi in English, which is impressive in itself. But I asked him, I saw you congratulate him on the contract. I congratulate him on the contract, $313.5 million. And then I asked him, you know, what was the gift you gave yourself? What was the reward you gave yourself? And he got that great Rafi smile, this little sort of shy smile. And he goes, and I asked him, I said, was it a house? Was it a car? Was it something else? He goes, it was a car. And then he paused. He goes, a Range Rover. And he got it all tricked out and it's going to be waiting for him back in Boston for the start of the season. And then after, you know, and he told me that after he signed that contract, his family had a not just a gathering of his family members, but the whole neighborhood, like 40 to 50 people. He said huge number of people came over to the house. They're all celebrating together. His mom, he said, was making chicken and rice. And in our conversation, I could see Rafi. He's like looking for the word for chicken. He goes, polo, polo, chicken. And it was so great to see his face and his happiness. And at the back end of that, Carl, he looked at me and he goes, how good do you think we're going to be? And I was like, I don't think you're going to be very good. Like I a lot of injury risk. And we talked about how the Red Sox were really cohesive in 2018 and they were cohesive in 2021. And I felt like they weren't last year. And I mentioned to him, I said, look, even if you don't make the playoffs, biggest thing for me is that you guys get back to being this way, Carl. And I felt that yesterday that you did feel like this group is going to at least be together at the beginning of the year.
Well, it's interesting what it is that unifies teams. And it's funny how at the end of the year, when most teams are hoisting a trophy, one of the recurring themes that they repeat is, well, nobody really picked us. Everybody was, you know, kind of against us. Nobody thought we could do this. The Red Sox clearly are one of those teams that are using that chip on their shoulder as a way to become tighter. Like, nobody really believes in us. And one thing about athletes, you're never going to walk into a locker room or a clubhouse at the beginning of the season and have the athletes that are on that team think, yeah, they're right. I mean, you can't do that. When your record is 0-0, you can't go into a season thinking, in our division, the Yankees are way better, the Blue Jays are way better, the Rays are way better. Like, you cannot do that. Every one of those players is proud. As Alex Cora told us during the game, we get Cy Youngs, we got World Series rings. Like, don't tell us that we suck. We don't think that way. And they believe if a lot of things go right, they got a real chance to compete. And you and I or anybody else that's out there with some negativity is not going to knock that off of them. There's no way. So we'll see. They believe, and I think you're right. I think they're a close group, and maybe that's one of the reasons they feel closer, united. We're in this together. Nobody believes. Let's go.
And the other team we saw yesterday, the Phillies, you know, they barely made the playoffs, 87 wins. But the team in 2023, Carl, I think is going to be much closer to what we saw in the postseason. You know, they came within a couple of wins of winning the World Series than what we saw during the regular season. That group really feels good about itself.
Yeah, to me, they're in a lot of ways they're the Houston Astros of the National League. I think Turner is an MVP. I think he's going to win the MVP if he's healthy. I think all these rule changes really benefit him. I think being in that ballpark benefits him. I think you tell me, just listening to the way Dave Dombrowski talked yesterday, barring some weird thing happening in the spring, Andrew Painter's on that team. I mean, he is on that team. He's going to be really good. There may be bumps early, but he's surrounded by Nola and Wheeler and other veterans on that team. And it's sort of like when you think about the perfect formula for success, veterans, for sure. They're going to get Harper back at some point in the middle of the season. Like, that's a huge boost that other teams aren't getting. They're good enough to stay in contention with the Mets and the Braves. They benefit from not having to play them as often as last year. Castellanos is determined to be a better player. Bryson Stott is coming off, as he told us yesterday, I watched every single playoffs game. I watched every World Series with the volume at 10, and he recognized there were some deficiencies in his swing at the end of the season. So what you hope for is your players work on certain things that take them to another level. And I look at Castellanos and Stott as two examples. Bone put on 10 pounds of muscle. Like, they're all seemingly doing things to improve themselves. And I feel really good about the Philadelphia Phillies in a very, very hard division.
Yeah, Bohm was funny yesterday when we talked to him during the course of the game about his workout. And he goes, you know, if I keep getting asked about it, I'm going to get drug tested. but, you know, I agree. He looks like he's growing. And I'm kind of thinking about writing this story, Carl. Tell me what you think about this. After I walked away from the Phillies yesterday, I thought about a fun article would be the best clubhouse guys ever. For me, in the last 15, 20 years, I think the best was CC Sabathia. You know, you heard the stories about how inclusive he was, how when he was with the Indians, how he would have any cookout was at his house.
Right.
And his mom would be the one who would cook, and he pulled everybody together. Kyle Schwarber, I think, is that guy right now, Carl. I mean, the stories that I was hearing. First off, and you saw this and I did too, you know, he comes onto the field before any of the other Phillies, he walks over the Red Sox and it's like a returning hero. And that was the conversation among some of the Red Sox players last year. Like, man, do we miss Schwarbs? And then you sort of see the impact he's having on the Phillies. He's in the middle of everything.
Didn't one of the Red Sox kind of jokingly say, well, wait a minute, we rolled out the red carpet. Schwarber was using a medicine ball in our clubhouse or in our weight facilities. They were joking about that. Look, when Schwarber threw his bat down and complained about the strike zone a couple of years ago, and he pointed to his bench and to the other bench, He's like, look, this is about baseball. This is about all of us out here. We're getting messed with. You're not just screwing our team. You're screwing their team. You know, figure this strike zone out. He's a bridge builder. I mean, and he's the easy guy to gravitate to. You know, he's kind of throwback, acknowledges his workout routine's a little different. He was joking about a fastball that felt like it was 1,000 miles an hour when it was probably 91, his first swing of the spring. He's a human being. And I think in a lot of ways, a lot of these guys are portrayed otherwise, and they don't necessarily do anything to change that. The microphones do just that, but Schwarber walks in and you're like, that's my guy. Who do you want to hang out with from baseball, similar to your column? Who's sort of the three guys you want to go to dinner with or have a beer? Kyle Schwarber is on the list. I mean, he's on the list. So, yeah, I agree. I think it'd be a great article. And it'd be great to hear from the other players, because there's probably a few guys in clubhouse that you don't think about that serve that role that we wouldn't know about.
Nelson Cruz, you know, is another guy. He hears so many stories about how, you know, he draws people in. And part of the reason why I think Schwarber's able to do that is he doesn't think of himself as being a big deal. Like, he doesn't put himself above anybody. And he has unbelievable humility when it comes to talking about his own career. Yesterday, he gave us an example that Ken Revisa, you know, the late, great mental skills coach for the Chicago Cubs. He gave us an example of what Ken Revisa told him about, you know, imagine swinging a bat. He literally jumped on his back, climbed on Schwarber's back and said, okay, imagine yourself mentally trying to deal with this, because that's the burden you take on when you're thinking about past struggles and, you know, your issues that you're having. The way he related that was so great. And it's part of what draws people in. Before you go, I think you want to join me in a shout out, say, to Andy Fletcher, who was the home plate umpire yesterday. There was a situation the first inning in which he called a violation on the catcher who had, you know, attempted to call timeout with 8 seconds left. And we didn't know exactly what was going on. And so I went out between innings and I asked him, I said, hey, what was the ruling that you just made right there? He goes, you know what? I don't know if I got it right. He said, I'm still learning all these new rules. And so he talked with the other umpires in between the next half inning. And then he came back to me, walked over to where I was and said, hey, just want to let you know that I got that wrong. And what I should have done is just charge the team, the Phillies, with a disengagement rather than, call a ball on the catcher. Right. And I just thought it was great. I mean, first off, how many years do we talk about? We're sitting up in the booth, we're watching the game. We don't know what's going on. And it felt like we didn't necessarily have access to the umpires. Not only could we find out what happened, but I just respect the fact that he's like, hey, we're learning. He's being honest. And he's telling us exactly what wrong, so we can get it right too.
Yeah. No, everybody benefits from transparency all the time. But in the case of these new rules, we acknowledge they're new. It's implied not everybody knows them. They're new. And the interpretation of them still has some gray area. So the idea that he acknowledged, like, look, I got it wrong. The catcher calls a timeout with under 8 seconds on the pitch clock. Like, in just sort of intuitively, given all these rules, you're like, I don't think you can do that. And if you do that, okay, then there's some consequence. And the consequence isn't a ball, which is what he called. It's one disengagement. You're allowed three before there's a balk. So it doesn't necessarily penalize you to the extent that a balk would, but there was something there that he just knew probably wasn't right. Like, we can't stop this. This is the whole point of pace of play. So yes, absolutely. A thank you and a credit to Andy Fletcher. And you hope all the umpires realize, as we do, we're all in this together. You know, nobody is yet at the point where you're going to go up and say, you didn't know that rule? Like, how did you not know that yet? Because very few people know them yet.
Yeah. I mean, what we talked about with Schwarber is exactly what we could say about Andy Fletcher. The humility that he worked with yesterday was really cool.
Yeah.
So, all right, Ravi, thanks for doing this. Have a good time today.
All right, bud. We'll see you Houston, right? Houston White Sox to kick things off.
Well, March, we'll be on Zoom before that. We'll be on a podcast before that. We'll see you next week.
You got that. I'm talking about our next baseball game. But yes, I'll see you next week. See you guys.
The
Los Angeles Dodgers.
The Dodgers have been baseball's model of stability, reaching the postseason each of the last 10 seasons, including in 2022, when they won 107 games, the best in the majors. But 2023 could be a year of transition. And with the Padres all in to win, the Dodgers appear as vulnerable as they've been in a long time.
Newcomers.
With the front office intent on slashing the team's payroll in 2023, perhaps in preparation for pursuit of Shohei Ohtani in the fall, the Dodgers made some short-term investments, adding J.D. Martinez, Miguel Rojas for infield depth, and David Peralta, the longtime Diamondbacks outfielder.
Gone, but not forgotten.
Trey Turner was the number two hitter for the Dodgers last year, scored 101 runs and drove in 100. Cody Bellinger is gone after winning a Rookie of the Year award, a Gold Glove award, and an MVP for the Dodgers. Tyler Anderson was an important part of the Dodgers rotation last year and signed with the Angels. Justin Turner was not only one of the Dodgers' most consistent hitters in recent seasons, he was a clubhouse leader.
Breakout star.
Miguel Vargas, 23 years old, will get a chance to establish himself in the Dodgers infield after posting a 915 OPS in AAA last season.
The X Factor.
With Gavin Lux out for the season, the Dodgers are already scrambling in their search for answers at shortstop. Maybe that'll be Chris Taylor or Miguel Rojas, or maybe they'll eventually make a trade for someone like the Orioles' Jorge Mateo. It's possible this will be an ongoing issue for a team that led the majors in victories last year.
The Baseball Tonight Podcast win projection.
Pecota pegs them at 95.1. Sarah Lang's 94. Hembos is 96. I've got them at 94. It'll be more of a struggle than we're accustomed to for LA. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com, talking to us from Arizona. Sarah, how you doing?
I am doing great, Buster. Seeing baseball today, get to see Bruce Bochy in the Rangers-Giants game, so I'm very excited about that. How are you?
I'm doing great. And say hi to Boach for me and tell him I still brag about his 10 to 15 foot jump shot. And I don't know if it was actually a jump shot, but a 10 to 15 foot shot that he always was very reliable on with in rec ball.
I love it. I absolutely will.
Okay. We're going to start with a Bleacher tweet today. SB Brazington, her name is Sarah, writes, I'm heading down to Florida for two spring training games, March 27, 28. No friends can join me. How do I get the most out of my solo experience? Is Sarah Langs available to hang out? We should have such a fun time talking about how, quote unquote, baseball is the best. Any chance you'll be at the Braves spring training games, March 27, 28?
I will not be because I'll be getting ready for our opening day game on ESPN a couple of days later. But I love being in a game by myself. I used to do that a whole lot. And I would say that my fellow Sarah should just take in everything around her and, you know, don't be shy about talking with a, you know, seatmate. If something seems to catch your eye, you're reacting to the same play, something like that. But being there by yourself is a great way to really observe everything around you. So I think she will have a great time. I'm sorry I can't be there.
So we talked about how at the baseball writers dinner, Julio Rodriguez sought you out, wanted to meet you. I'm curious, since you've been in Arizona, if you've had someone ask you for a picture, pose for a picture.
Oh my gosh, no, no, thank goodness. That would be a lot for me, I think. But I did get a chance to chat with Diamondbacks manager Torrey Lovello. He made sure to come out of the dugout before a game the other day just to say hi. I met him back at the winter meeting. So, I mean, you know, people are so wonderful. My parents keep commenting on that, you know, we go by, we see writers and people who work for some of these teams who stop to say hi, say something to me, and it's way too kind and very, very nice.
All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three
is 99. So the other day we talked about Andrew Pandor and then he made his debut. So I figured we could update on them. So he hit 99 in that debut with his four seamer. He averaged 96.8 on 19 four seamers. And we were talking about how hitters really looked like they were a bit overwhelmed by what he was throwing out. And now I'll mention that historical note I kind of teased for you guys on the broadcast and for us on Tuesday. So we were talking, getting ready for the game you guys had on ESPN with the Phillies yesterday. And I don't remember who started the line of thinking, but there was this idea that there have been some young players to debut on Dave Dombrowski run team.
I'm just going to interrupt you and take credit for it. That was my thought.
Good. Okay. I was hoping, but I didn't want to be wrong. You know, I never want to be wrong. All right. So Buster had this great idea about guys to debut at a young age on Dave Dombrowski run teams and maybe an age where other teams might not have called them up. So I dug around a little bit. We obviously mentioned Josh Beckett and Rick Porcello. But if you go a little deeper, there's also Ryan Dempster in 1998 for the Marlins. He had made 5 AAA starts before debuting. And Jeremy Bonderman in 2003 after having 1 minor league year, all at high A the year before. And the common thing here, these were all high school pitchers. So it seems to point toward the idea that Andrew Painter is going to get a real good shot.
Number two
is 98.9. So we're going to update on a few young pitchers. Next up is Grayson Rodriguez of the Orioles. He's their number 2 prospect, the number 7 prospect overall, according to MLB Pipeline. He was up to 98.9 yesterday in his debut in the spring. He averaged 97.9. And there was this really cool note about his extension that my colleague David Adler pointed out. His average release extension was 7.4 feet.
Wow.
That would have been tied for 5th highest in the majors last season. That's going to be really fun to watch.
Number one
is 101. So one other young pitcher I want to talk about because we get Statcast data, especially down in Florida, is Nate Pearson, who was a big-time prospect for the Blue Jays, pitched in 2020, was amazing in his debut, then dealt with injuries in 2021. Did not pitch at the major league level last year. His big thing was velocity. Yesterday, 14 fastballs, averaged 99.2, and had 101 mile an hour strikeout. Really good to see after all of those injuries. I'm not sure how they plan to use him, but I remember watching him in the Dominican Winter League this offseason. Pitching 12 games, he allowed 1 unearned run. And I was thinking, hey, maybe he will finally be back. That'd be great for the Blue Jays and for Blue Jays fans.
So my, and I don't, you know, I haven't officially asked anybody with the Blue Jays this, but my understanding is that, that they are going to use him out of the bullpen. And, you know, in my time covering baseball, there are definitely pitchers who emotionally are better suited to pitch out of the bullpen than be starting pitchers. You know, I've had relievers tell me that when they were starters, they hated the 5 days between starts because it was all this buildup. It was like an NFL Sunday, you know, that they felt more comfortable just sitting in the bullpen and reacting to the phone ringing. And I kind of wonder if Nate Pearson is one of those guys, Sarah. Like, I think that'll be better for him. What jumped out to me, by the way, about that data about Andrew Painter that you sent me the other day was for a guy who's 6'7", while it looked like he was throwing downhill, and I guess he is, literally, and the hitters always look like they're swinging uphill the other day, his stride is actually not that long. And that was a surprise to me when you sent that. So that that Grayson Rodriguez note is remarkable how long his stride is. And that is bad for someone who throws that hard with that long of a stride. That's bad news for hitters.
Absolutely. I mean, we talk about something called perceived velocity. We don't always measure it. But I can just tell you that if a pitch is up to 98.9 and the guy is releasing it from 7.4 feet closer to you than average, that is going to look like a lot more than 98.9. So to your point, that is really, really tough for hitters. And it was interesting with Painter because I took a look at his extension and it was about 6.4 feet. So that was slightly above the MLB average for last year, but he also doesn't need it because he's throwing about 100. So, you know, all of these guys use this in such different ways, but I was pretty impressed to see Grayson Rodriguez's extension be like that in this spring training game.
Yeah, this is me talking. I mean, he was good enough to be on the Orioles roster in the first part of the year before they promoted him to the big leagues. You wonder if they had had Grayson Rodriguez in the big leagues, if they had had Gunnar Henderson in the big leagues earlier, if they kept those guys at the trade deadline. Taylor, they had so many opportunities to get better last year.
Wow, that's weird, Buster. This is breaking news to me, man. I wish I could have watched that pitching performance yesterday, Sarah. That would have been fun live.
Oh no, was it not on TV?
Of course it wasn't. Masson, oh, no. For you.
You're talking. You're hearing the you know, an Orioles fan going down Bitter Boulevard, Sarah. So I'll rescue you from that. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Minnesota Twins.
The Twins had a season to forget in 2022, losing 84 games and winning 78. Minnesota dropped 22 of its last 33 games, a frustrating collapse.
Newcomers.
We probably should include Carlos Correa in this category because when he walked out the door at the end of the Twins' 2022 season, there was no expectation he would return. And that was before he twice agreed to proposals with other teams. But he's back now to be joined by Christian Vasquez, a good defensive catcher, and Joey Gallo and Michael Taylor, good defensive outfielders. The Twins also traded for starting pitcher Pablo Lopez and utility man Kyle Farmer.
Gone, but not forgotten.
To get Lopez, the Twins traded Luis Arraez. Really doesn't have a natural position, and they let catcher Gary Sanchez walk as a free agent, along with starting pitchers Dylan Bundy and Chris Archer.
Fault lines.
Byron Buxton's career has been filled with injuries, of course, and the Twins hope that they can use the DH in some days to get Buxton off his feet, but still in the lineup. After Correa failed physicals with the Giants and the Mets, there will be a lot of focus on the availability of the shortstop. He told reporters at the outset of spring training that he feels great, but he acknowledged that he'll alter his regimen after absorbing the opinions of specialists who fret that his mobility could decline in his early to mid-30s because of the effects of a broken leg in 2014.
The X Factor.
The Twins have built an exceptional defense that'll support what should be a good pitching staff. Correa, Buxton, Max Kepler, Joey Gallo, Michael A. Taylor, and Christian Vasquez are all highly regarded for their glove work.
Breakout star.
Jose Miranda hit 25 doubles and 15 homers in 125 games last season, and the Twins expect his production to grow, hitting behind Correa and Byron Buxton.
The Baseball Tonight Podcast win projection.
Hembo says 86 wins for the 2023 Twins. Pecota has Minnesota at 87.9. I've got the Twins at 88. Sarah Lang says 88. Todd Radom. is the chief executive of our weekly quiz, a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all around the country, all around the world, or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, welcome back to the podcast for 2023.
Buster, I am so excited. It is a new season. Spring is in the air. The light looks a little different. We're going to change the clocks, and I'm just so grateful and happy to be back with you.
So I'm going to ask you in future weeks about what you're seeing in the game and the way that it's transitioning this year with the pitch clock, et cetera. I'm going to wait a little bit longer to get your observations on that because we've been filling it up with a podcast every day. So instead, I'm going to throw you this curveball. I just told Carl Ravitch the story of the conversation I had with Rafael Devers yesterday, and I asked him what gift he gave himself after he signed that whopper $313.5 million deal. You're a Red Sox fan. I'm sure you're happy that he's going to be around for the foreseeable future, but he got that great Raffy grin, and he acknowledged, he said, a car. And he got a Range Rover, which he designed it. He said it's waiting for him in Boston. If you were to sign a $313.5 million deal, what do you think might be a gift to yourself?
Well, Buster, that's a great question. And I am not the kind of person who likes things. I mean, we all like things, but
you're not a car guy either.
I am not. I have a car and I want to get rid of it because I live in a city and it's a pain in the, you know what? You know, I have a lovely place to live. I would want to, I've reached the point in my life, and maybe you can relate, where experiences are better than stuff, right? Maybe I would buy myself an incredible watch. Maybe I would buy myself, you know, some hot sneakers. All right. Those are low budget items, but I would probably put it in buckets. You put a third of it away, approximately, if not more, for taxes. You take a third of it and you invest it wisely. And, you know, I would take several vacations that would be off the charts, 5-star hotels, restaurants, interesting experiences. And you can have my car if you really need it, by the way.
Yeah,
or maybe Rafael Devers needs my Subaru. I don't know.
You're talking about things. I've told my kids, because in the last 18 months, I've thrown out so many of my possessions, and I've told my kids that they need to thank me in advance of my death because I'm saving them so much time for after the fact that they won't have to go through it. All be taken care of. It all be, you know, slimmed down to what they actually might want and need rather than them having to sort through it.
Yeah. Listen, I moved in November and, you know, holidays came around shortly thereafter, and I had the same conversation with my offspring as they entered my new place for the first time in a new city. And, you know, the burden of all of that, Buster, could be a topic for a whole separate podcast, actually.
Right, exactly. All right. So our theme of the year is going to be unveiled in a future podcast. We are also going to start the quiz, I believe, next week. So we'll save those for later in spring training. This is like an early exhibition time when you're just getting a couple of reps in, couple of innings, couple of swings. Want to ask you what you're seeing on fields that's catching your eye.
Yeah. So from a visual perspective, Buster, 2023 is going to be a different kind of season because we are going to see advertisements in the form of patches on major league uniforms throughout the season. A handful of teams, including the Astros, Angels, Red Sox, Diamondbacks, Padres, and Reds to this point, have announced sponsorship deals with ads on patches. And while I don't want to give air to these advertisers, unless they're paying you and I and ESPN, which I'm not sure they are, but we've got a gamut of conglomerates and smaller companies, supermarket chains, telecommunications, insurance, this kind of thing. And it's going to take some getting used to, Buster. But here's the really weird aspect of this. As sports fans, we have, I think, grown accustomed to this here in the U.S. since the NBA broke the seal on ads on uniforms several years ago. And part of the reason that I think this has kind of been a smooth transition is that the NBA presents their advertisements in a very singular place on every team's uniforms. But in MLB, The ads are going to shift from the right to the left sleeve depending upon the handedness of a particular player.
No kidding.
Yeah. So you'll see guys with, you know, with ambidextrous players, switch hitters. I'm not quite sure how that's going to work. But as an example, Buster, the Cincinnati Reds are going to have a prominent Midwestern supermarket chain advertising on their uniforms. And Mr. Red, or Running Man, the guy, the little red guy with the big baseball head and the mustache, you know, whereas he was running right to left, paraphrasing before, he's also going to be running left to right, depending upon which sleeve the other unit, the ad is placed on. So it's kind of a strange thing. It's going to take some getting used to. And let's face it, some of these things look better than others. Briefly, too, just in researching this over the years, this plan was first proposed back in the late 90s, and it was considered to be such a fait accompli that there are quotes from Gene Orza, who was the second in command at the Players Union for all these years, saying the talks are very preliminary. To even discuss them, to give them substance they don't deserve, but be assured that whatever we do, it will be tasteful. A small logo on the uniform. At that time, they were contemplating an inch to an inch and a half logo on a sleeve. Buster, these are approximately 4 inches. So bigger is, I don't know if it's better, but bigger is everything in 2023.
Well, and in some ways, I know that there's no way that this was all planned as part of a larger concept. If you're going to do that, if you're going to roll out ads, maybe this is the year to do it, because a lot of the old school baseball fans who don't like the pitch clock, don't like the changes, they're going to be offended anyway, right? Yeah. You might as well just rip off the Band-Aid.
No, it's true. And, you know, listen, for those of us who work in that part of the industry, we've seen it coming for years. Collective bargaining agreement, which was agreed to last year, gave a year runway to get this thing done. And that's why it's happening now. But listen, you know, NHL is rolling out ads on uniforms. Other countries, of course, we saw the World Cup with the look that those uniforms have had for many years. So, yeah. And let's face it, Buster, we can contemplate some of the teams that have not yet connected with uniform sponsors, let's call them, their ads. What do the Yankees have on their uniforms when they make an enormous deal? What is that company? Just speculating. What are the synergies? I mean, we've seen this in the NBA. Lesser markets, let's say, have lesser sponsors, but the biggest of the big have pretty impressive partners.
Yeah, well, 60 years ago, the Yankees definitely would have had U.S. Steel.
Yes.
Right. Because that's what they were always compared to.
Yeah. Exactly. Right? Exactly. And you know, let's face it, we've seen this in connection with ballpark naming rights as well. If the Dodgers were ever to rename Dodger Stadium, and let's hope they don't, well, it would have to take a pretty serious thing to make that happen. Lastly, on this, one of my favorites was when the Giants were constructing their new ballpark. In the late 90s, the thought was, well, maybe Ralph Lauren will come in and call it the Polo Grounds, which I thought would have been brilliant, but it never happened.
That would have been awesome. Before you go, tell me a uniform change that's caught your eye in these early spring games, some sort of a design change that you really like. The other day I was watching the Twins broadcast, and one of their club executives was saying how that uniform change has been well received. What's jumped out of you?
Yeah, I think it's definitely the Twins. Buster, the past couple of years, because of pandemic production issues and the rolling in of Nike as MLB's on-field supplier of uniforms, we haven't seen epic changes. En masse, the way that we used to, say, a decade ago. But the Twins definitely stand out. The Twins have opted for a cleaner look, kind of devoid of outlines on their uniform lettering. It's sort of retro, but it's in an updated way. And I think one of the interesting things is across the boards this year, all MLB teams will have what Nike, and so much depends upon them, but they're calling it a 4+1 plan. So teams are limited to 4 uniforms plus their City Connect jersey. More marketing jargon. I'm going to have a couple of teams rolling out City Connect jerseys this season, a number of them, actually. It's not officially been announced who they are, but we can speculate. But anyway, you know, some of these clubs that have had six different uniforms, the Mariners used to have a ton of uniforms. Mariners aren't even going to have a gray road jersey this year. So things are going to be a little bit different. But to your point, the Twins definitely stand out. Still red, white, and blue. One other one that I kind of like, Buster, being, as I always say, a child of the 70s and 80s, the Kansas City Royals will have a full-on powder blue look. So get ready for George Brett to go ballistic over pine tar.
And yeah, and if you don't know what Todd's referring to, find that on YouTube and check out the color of his uniform there. One of the great moments in baseball history. All right, Todd, good to see you again, and we'll talk to you next week.
Great to be back. Thank you, guys.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Friday. Mark Suhu, at Mark Suhu, writes in, with pitchers calling their own pitches, are catchers wearing an earpiece? I was trying to imagine how it can be audibly relayed to the catcher without the batter hearing it while still not blocking the catcher's ability to hear.
Right. And Mark sent that question in. And then yesterday in the Twins game, Kenta Maeda was facing the Blue Jays, and that's exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. It was the Tampa Bay Rays. The Tampa Bay Rays hitters could hear every pitch call that was being made by Kenta Maeda, relaying that to the catcher. So an adjustment needs to be made there.
Spring training, baby. Trevor Dunning at Montana_Met writes in, now that the AL and NL have the same DH rules, do you think there should be one MVP per year and not two?
Nah, I mean, because in the end, the AL and the NL are going to be distinct. We have the champion of the AL plays the champion of the NL in the World Series, for example. So I'm still keeping two MVPs.
Last one for the week, Gregory Gosnell at Carl's Jr. 9982 writes, in any chance the Yanks send IKF to Ladd to open the door for Volpe, cheap rental would affect the luxury tax next year.
Well, they actually sent Gavin Lux. It wouldn't affect Gavin Lux's status next year. In other words, you essentially get a guy for 1 year. We talked in the podcast with Alden the other day that the Yankees and Dodgers actually had conversations during the offseason about IKF as the Dodgers look for some depth in their infield. They wound up, settling on Rojas. Who knows? Maybe that'll happen. As we talked about the other day, though, the money potentially, because IKF's making $6 million this year, that potentially could be a factor.
There was my Ron Burgundy moment. Ladd, LA Dodgers, duh. Thanks for writing in, everyone. # Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. We'll be back next week.
All right, that's it for today. My thanks to Sarah, Rabbi, Todd, Sarah, Taylor. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.